Hello and welcome to another episode of Perspektiven. Perspektiven, or Perspectives, is a conversation podcast about information systems and related topics. In today's episode, I talk with Stephen Alter about the work systems approach he has been developing since the early 1990s. Before we get to our conversation, I'd like to make a few announcements to our German-speaking listeners. For non-German-speaking listeners, I recommend that you skip forward by about 2 minutes or use one of the chapter marks that I provide, and then we will proceed in English. Hallo, herzlich willkommen zu einer weiteren Folge von Perspektiven, Gespräche zu Themen der Wirtschaftsinformatik. Mein Name ist Stefan Strecker und heute spreche ich mit Stephen Alter über den von ihm entwickelten Work Systems Ansatz. Was Work Systems sind und was sich hinter dem Work Systems Ansatz verbirgt, erklärt Steve gleich an vielen Beispielen sehr ausführlich. Wir sprechen über seine Motivation, diesen Ansatz zu entwickeln, und über die Entwicklung des Ansatzes von den frühen 1990er Jahren bis heute. Steve erläutert dann die wesentlichen Elemente des Ansatzes und gibt Einblicke in seine Erfahrungen mit praktischen Anwendungen. Zuvor kurz einige Hinweise in eigener Sache. Ideen für Gesprächsthemen und für Gäste sind sehr herzlich willkommen. Einfach auf den üblichen Kanälen an mich senden. Falls der Podcast gefällt, freue ich mich über eine positive Bewertung in iTunes. Vielen Dank. Und nun zu dem Gespräch mit Stephen Alter über den Work Systems Ansatz.
I will now switch to English because my guest today is Stephen Alter, who I'm very happy to have on the show. He is here from San Francisco and we will talk about his approach on work systems. Welcome to the show,
Stephen. Thank you.
We will start by laying out what work systems are and get an initial idea of what work systems are. And then we will talk about the background on how work systems developed. So, Stephen, what are work systems?
So a work system is just a system in an organization. We normally think about it as a system in which people are doing work to produce something for some customer who could be inside the organization or outside. So, for example, there's a hiring system inside a company. That means that people who are involved in hiring go through a process. They use certain information, and the result of that is that they hired somebody. But they also collected applications. They also had to send out letters to people and so on. All of that was what was produced by the hiring work system. Another work system is a work system of, let's say it's manufacturing refrigerators. So a company has a work system of manufacturing refrigerators. So that takes certain inputs, goes through a certain process, and what's produced is refrigerators. Another company may have a sales work system in which people try to figure out who are the sales prospects for this company. Then they go out and they try to contact those people, and then they try to explain their product, and they hope that those people will be interested and will buy it. I was in a software company. We had a sales work system that did that. We also had a software development work system. We also had a customer service work system. So all of those are systems inside of an organization. So the main thing that I would say about this is that a lot of people are very interested in what is the strategy of an entire company. How does the entire company work as an entire company? Most problems are actually solved at a different level. They're solved at the level of we have a particular work system, we're hiring people, and we're not getting good results. Let's fix the work system. We're selling our product. We're not getting as good results as we want. Or maybe we have an opportunity to do something fundamentally different. Let's change our work system to make it better. So when you change the work system, what you're doing is you're saying the work system is usually people going through some kind of process to produce something you can say what it is, and there is a customer for it. Mm-hmm. If it's a hiring system, the customer is inside your company. If it's a sales system, most of it is outside of the company. So this way of thinking about things says that there are systems that could be directed in different directions. They might involve information systems in IT. They might not. So don't start by assuming that it's about IT. Start by assuming that it's about doing the work and getting a good business result.
So a work system is a unit of analysis looking at an organization?
Right. A work system is like a lens. I have a problem in the company, regardless of almost any operational problem in a company. I mean, you could have a problem in the company like people don't like the CEO. That's not an operational problem. That's a different kind of problem. But if you have a problem of the type, it's taking us too long to produce something, or we're trying to produce something, but we have too many errors and it's causing bad results, or we have an opportunity to do something really differently here. We see that people are doing this work differently outside. We want to change the way we do it. We want to re-engineer it. Those kinds of problems are work system problems, where you're thinking about the situation as a system of doing something. And then it's a question of how can you have an organized way of thinking about that system so that people can think about it for themselves, and so that they can talk to each other about it, and so that they can communicate with IT people about it. One more thing. This is the kind of analysis that you want to do before you try to figure out how you're going to use a computer to solve it. And what you almost always find is that the IT component is part of the story, but not all of the story.
So a work system includes the people working on a problem that you just described, and including the machines and the software. So it's an inclusive view. You call it a lens. It's a lens on a specific setting in an organization, including the processes, the activities that people do, right?
That's right. And so what I tried to do was come up with a way of starting to explain it basically in the terms that we just had, that are fairly vague, but that are directly understandable, and then try to be more and more specific about exactly what we mean. So, for instance, there's a definition of work system. And I don't know if I can remember it exactly from my presentations, but it's something like this. A work system is a system in which people and or machines perform processes and activities to produce products / services for internal and or external customers. Now, that long sentence just went through who's doing the work, the fact that we are doing work, the fact that we are producing something, the fact that I forgot to say that there are resources that are used, like information and technology and other resources, and we're producing something for customers. So the work system method basically starts there and says the thing we're talking about is work systems. We think about the opportunity or problem as a problem of the work system. We identify the work system that has the problem. We then analyze it using the method, and we come up with a recommendation of a better work system. And to me, that makes a lot more sense than starting by saying, we need to get some new software. What software should we have? Because you can't analyze what software you should have unless you know what work system is trying to support.
To me, a work system has an inclusive, like a holistic view. That's, for me, what I read into a work system, to have an inclusive view, not only view on software or information systems, but to consider the entire set that includes the work that needs to be done, the tasks, activities, and the processes running involving the people doing that.
That's exactly right. So let me give you a little bit about why I developed that. So I was in a software company that did manufacturing software for the semiconductor industry. And it's very complicated manufacturing. And so this was a long time ago. They manufacture differently now. But the feeling that I had was that a lot of our customers didn't do a very good analysis of how they would get benefits from our software. In many cases, they just had old software and the computer was becoming obsolete, so they just had to update. And they said, well, what's around that we can buy? Let's buy something that's good. This is pretty good software. Let's buy that. And to me, that was a way of solving an IT problem, but wasn't a way of getting the maximum benefit for the company. In those semiconductor companies at that time, there were very important metrics for the companies. The important metrics were things like, what is the yield, the percentage of good parts that we're producing versus how many we start? If you could improve your yield, that was really important for maximizing your profit. Another problem was, how long does it take to manufacture the stuff? If you could get things through the plant more quickly, that would be much better. Time to market was a big issue. Machine utilization was a big issue. So if our software could help people solve those problems, then there's more and more reasons why they would want to buy that software. It seemed to me as though many of our customers really just didn't do a very good analysis of why our software was going to help them with business problems as opposed to IT problems. So when I returned to academia, after being in that startup software company for 8 years, which was a wonderful experience, but I returned to academia and I said, what do I want to work on? And I decided what I would try to work on is, how should typical business people think about systems in their own organizations? And if they're going to buy software, how should they think about what that software is going to do for them? And eventually it came out that after I'd started writing textbooks, and more or less the textbooks taught me what I now know, the natural way of thinking about those situations was, we have a set of work systems in our organization. We want to improve those work systems. We're going to get new software so that we can improve the work systems. When a salesperson comes and wants to sell us software, we have to think about not what they think are the features and benefits of the software, but instead we have to think about, why do I believe that software is going to help us do our work and get better results? So the work system method basically says, what is the work system? How well does it work now? If we got that additional software, would it work better? Why do I think it would work better? And it gives you a very good lens for talking about that.
So we're now at the point then talking about the intentions you had when you were developing the work systems method or the approach. You worked in a software company and you were seeing that things could be improved. Then when you went to academia, you also taught the method to students. So it has a background both in business applications and business, as well as in teaching MBA students, right? Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, what happened was, I returned to academia, and a sales representative from a textbook company came to me one time and said, so what book do you like best in your field, which was information systems? And I said, actually, I don't like any of the books very much. I think they're well written. I think that they're very intelligent. There's no real serious errors in them or anything like that. But I think they actually would not have been useful either to my staff or to my customers, because we always had people who understood what a computer was. So that was no problem. We often had problems with our customers not really visualizing how our software was going to help them do important things. When our staff went out to help them, I had the feeling that a lot of times it took too long for us to train our staff to understand what the problems were that the software that the customers had, except for the problems with our software. So it was easy to teach people about our software, but how could we maximize the benefit from the whole enterprise? If you're a software company and you have software that really helps people accomplish important goals in their company, then you're going to sell more software, you're going to have much happier customers, and so on. So it seemed very natural to me to try to think through, how could we have helped our customers more? And maybe if I wrote this textbook, that would have helped both the customers and the staff. So that's what I was thinking about. And so I started writing an information system textbook. And the information system textbook eventually went through four editions. And with each edition, I would I wrote the book, I'd give it to the students, and then I would ask the students, please go into your own company. I generally had MBA and executive MBA students at the time. I would say, go into your own company, find a work system that has a problem or opportunity, and use the ideas that I'm trying to teach you as a way of making a recommendation, of analyzing the situation and making a recommendation about what should happen in the future, about what changes you should make. And as I went through that process, I would always ask myself, the students tried to come up with a recommendation. Do I believe their recommendation? Do I believe I could have taught them something that would have led to a better recommendation? And so what I would do is then just modify my own material to try to make it better and to try to give better guidelines that would push the students to make really useful recommendations that would have, at least in my opinion, would have had better business results ultimately. So I did that for many years, and what came out is what I call the work system method. And then eventually it got formalized more, and then I started calling the ideas behind it work system theory, and the method was a method of just using some templates and trying to figure out what is the current system, what is the problem, what are we trying to improve, what do I recommend as an improvement.
And when did you start working on the work systems approach?
The first edition of the textbook was written in was published in 1992.
Okay.
So I've been working on this stuff for a very long time. I hate to say how long I've been working on it. And it's turned out to be very interesting. I'm really glad I got involved in it. I'm really glad I wrote those textbooks. And I'm glad that eventually it's turned into something that's gone a lot of other directions. So I actually literally have in the second edition of the book, in the preface of that book, I talk about how I went out after the first edition came out and I did 20 lectures in different universities trying to ask them, if you went to, let's say you had 1 hour to talk to a business person about some system topic, you knew that those business people were going to be in a meeting tomorrow and they were going to have to try to decide what software to buy and how to improve their systems and so on and so forth. You have 1 hour to talk to them. You don't know what company they're in, and you don't know, like you're at a big convention or something. You don't know what company they're in. You don't know what problem they're going to have, but you have 1 hour to tell them something useful to think about with regard to systems, because maybe that will help them. And that was the image that I had. So I went around and gave this presentation, I think 22 times. And I said, so this is what I think I would tell them. What do you think? And I got feedback, and that just helped me launch the whole thing. So I really have been working on that for a very, very long time. And then gradually the work system method came out, work system theory came out, and some of the extensions came out. So basically I got plenty to do still, which I'm happy about.
And now we're at a point that we need to talk about more about the work systems as an approach, because it has many different components. It consists of a couple of things. Maybe you can talk about what the basic elements are that you develop.
Okay, so let me briefly just say what the template is that I give students to work with. I think that would be a good idea. So I tell students, go into your own company or like a team of three, choose some situation. And if it's people who have left a job so that they can now come back to school full time or so on, maybe it's not quite as easy for them. So they have to find some situation that is a system in an organization. And usually people can do that. So they find the situation and they have to say, number one, what is the problem or opportunity that I want to solve, I want to deal with? So it may be it's taking us too long to do something. The results of what we're doing are not good enough. The people who are doing the work are very unhappy doing the work. It could be any number of situations. They have to identify the situation and then they have to name it. They have to say, the name of this is the hiring system at company X, or the name of this is the sales system at company Y. And then they have to answer a few questions about that system. They have to say, what is the problem or opportunity? What's the main problem? We know that as we dig into it, we're going to find other things. But just as a starting point, what's the main problem? Then look at it in a little more detail and say, what are the measures of performance for this work system? And if it's an internally directed work system, like a work system that's producing something for people inside the company, usually the measures of performance are efficiency measures, like how much does it cost to do this work? How long does it take to do the work from start to finish? What is the error rate for doing the work? How many times do you have to rework things? How satisfied are the people who are doing the work, that they're doing it well and they find it rewarding and so on? If it's if it produces a product that goes to customers, from a customer point of view, regardless actually of whether it's an internal customer or external customer, from a customer point of view, it produces something. So for a customer, what's the cost of acquiring that? What's the cost of maintaining it over time? How reliable is it from a customer's point of view? How is it, high quality or low quality from a customer's point of view? And again, this is just the kinds of questions you would ask if you're going into a situation to try to understand it. Another question you would almost always ask is, are there any key incidents that happened recently that we want to be careful about not repeating? So an example is, we have a work system, and then 3 weeks ago, it went down for 2 days because something went wrong with the electricity, or for some other reason, or something went wrong with the computer. And that's a different kind of question than asking what are the measures of performance. So the key incidents are often very important for deciding what to do. Another thing that's important for deciding what to do is, what are the constraints on any decision that you might make? So for instance, a constraint might be, we bought new software last year. We absolutely cannot buy new software again. No one would let us do that. So therefore, whatever decision we make has to assume that we're using the same software that we had before, which is certainly possible. Another possibility would be that we only have a budget of a certain amount. We can't make a recommendation that would exceed that budget in terms of the amount of time and energy and so on that we are going to put into this. So after getting those points in the background, then we have to do something that's really important, which is producing a one-page summary of the work system. And I call that a work system snapshot. And that's turned out to be a very useful tool. So a work system snapshot is one page that has six areas on it. At the bottom of the page, you have who are the participants in the work system, what is the information that's used or produced by the work system, what's the technology. So just a list of participants, a list of informational elements, like it could be we have our customer list, and we have our list of invoices, and we have our list of warranty items. And that's the information we happen to be using right now. And what's the technology? Well, the technology is, it's all on a database system, and we get it through some particular means, and some of it's in a cloud and so on. That might be relevant. So along the bottom of the page, it's who are the participants, what's the information, what's the technology. Above that is what are the processes and activities. And so this is a list of the steps that people go through. And so it basically has to be just a bunch of sentences that says, that like in a hiring system, it would say, the hiring manager requests a new hire. The organization okays the request. A staffing coordinator produces the advertisements and sends them out to whatever places we want to advertise. A coordinator receives all of the emails and combines them in some way and gives them to the hiring manager, and so on. Just a series of statements like that that are basically sentences that describe what happened. Nothing about the detailed logic, because it's not important to have the detailed logic right now at that stage. And so that's the fourth segment of that page, is what are the processes and activities. Across the top of the page, there are two more blocks. One of them is, what is being produced here? what products or services are produced, and then who are the customers for those products and services. And believe it or not, this is actually a semi-rigorous way of talking about a system in an organization. Because if you mention someone as a participant, they have to do at least one of the steps. They have to be involved in at least one of the steps. If you mention something as information, it has to be used in at least one step. If you mention something as a product or service that's produced by the work system, it has to be produced by one or more of the steps. If someone's a customer, they have to receive and use whatever's produced by the work system. And putting all of this on one page is kind of hard, actually, in many cases. And it's hard because there's this temptation to put more and more stuff into that one page. But if you put it on one page, you solve a very important problem. You've identified the scope of the problem. So in this template, you start by saying, what's the name of the system? The name of the system is the hiring system or the sales system or the customer service system. That's not clear enough to really know what it is. And this one-page summary is clear enough to know what it is, to establish its identity, and to establish what is really its scope. Like just the list of participants tells you something about its scope, and then the steps, where does it start, where does it end, tells you about its scope. And that one-page document is something that you can argue about. And different people would start with a different one-page document, and they could get together and have a discussion about, well, how do we want to think about this together as the system that we are both working on? There was one instance where I had a team of executive MBA students come in and say they were very frustrated with this project. I said, what's wrong? And they said, we're trying to put together this work system snapshot, and we can't do it. We keep on getting disagreements, and we're having real trouble trying to say what's the scope of this system. And I said, well, you know, that's really great, because you have learned that you would have had a disaster if you went out and tried to spend 400,000 euro with a CRM system, customer relationship management system. That would have been a disaster because you didn't know what was the scope of the problem you were even trying to solve. So the 3 hours you spent on this probably moved things forward in a really important way. And then at some point, if you ever want to buy software for this, you better figure out what work system you're trying to improve. If you can't figure that out, I would suggest don't buy the software. And so anyway, this is, again, part of this template for analyzing the work system. And I've just talked for 5 minutes, and I haven't gone through the whole template. Because I told you the first part of it is establishing what is the work system that we're talking about. So basically, what is it? What are the measures of performance? What are the key incidents we want to respond to? What's anything else we want to say before we even start the real analysis? Then what's the summary of the work system? Now we're ready to do the analysis. We haven't really started the analysis yet. Now we've just described what we're trying to improve. When we go into the analysis, then we have the question of how deep do we want to go? For many people, just what I've told you right now is enough to start thinking about how we can improve it. For other situations, there really is some information. Like, for instance, let's say it's a work situation where we have complaints about how the work is unpleasant, or complaints about how we're making a lot of errors and so on. Then one of the really logical things to do is to make a list of the complaints, see how many you have of different types, and produce something called a Pareto chart that says this is the relative frequency of the different kinds of complaints. And you usually find that several kinds of complaints are 80% of the complaints. So under those circumstances, you would say, well, you know, maybe we should try to solve those first. Let's just think about solving those, and maybe some other complaints are very unusual, and maybe we don't have to solve them. On the other hand, maybe a couple of those other complaints are about extremely serious matters, like a customer got injured by our product or something like that, where we better solve it, even if it only happened a few times. Now, that's the kind of analysis that you take your initial discussion of what is the system, and now you have to figure out, what do I really want to analyze here? I can't tell you in advance that you ought to do a Pareto chart, because it's very possible that you don't have the data for a Pareto chart. In some cases, people say, you know, the problem really is that we don't exactly understand the details of the process. So if we don't understand the details of the process and we think that's an important problem, then I would say go do a flowchart or a BPMN diagram or something else that will lay out the details of the process.
Can we stop at that point?
Yeah, sure.
Let me just ask a couple of questions to get an understanding of what you just explained. So what is behind your idea is a specific lens, as you said, on problems in organizations. Mm-hmm. And the questions you were talking about are, to me, they are analytic questions that apply to a lot of cases. They would encourage me to think hard about a specific problem. I think that's the intention you have with those questions. But that's also my question to you. And then the work systems approach also provides a terminology to talk about those problems. And you mentioned a couple of these terms, and also only by framing the problem in terms of participants, in terms of the products and services, or you say products/services, that helps me talking about it. It provides me a language, mm-hmm. if you will. Mm-hmm. And then the set of things that I get from the work systems approach encourages thinking. And also for me, it in the first step, abstracting from the problem. I'm not looking at all the details of the specific problem. It fosters abstracting from some details and focusing on those that I'm particularly interested in. That's
exactly right. So when you're asking business professionals to think about a particular situation, you really can't tell them. It has to be discussed in a very particular way, and I'll tell you all of the details that you have to deal with. Mostly that won't work very well. On the other hand, if you just sort of wave your hands and don't really give much guidance, you're not telling someone something that's useful. So this work system approach developed over time where it started from one basic idea. The basic idea is, when you think about a system in an organization, don't start by thinking about the software. Think about the work system that you're talking about. That's the systems you're talking about. And the thing that has the problem or opportunity is a work system, not the software. That's the basic idea. Then once you say that, then you'd say, more or less, what is a work system? Well, it's more or less people doing work to produce something for customers using information and technology. And we can summarize that on one page in a way that doesn't try to put people in a box particularly. It's pretty straightforward to put that information on one page and to have a discussion about what is the scope of the work system that we're talking about here. And once we've gotten through that, then we can try to get more specific about how can we drill down into this to get to a higher level of detail that will be useful for actually solving the problem. And so the language of this very purposefully tries to be somewhat rigorous, but not too rigorous. Not so rigorous that it prevents people from thinking new thoughts. So that's the goal. When you think about every single item that I mentioned about a work system, it turns out that there are a lot of different ideas. So let me go through a little of that. A work system always has participants. So you might ask, are the managers participants? Well, in some cases, managers are participants. In some cases, they aren't. When I was in a software company, I was managing a group that was doing customer support and product analysis and documentation and training and so on and so forth. I actually wasn't sitting there just checking off what other people do. I was actually doing a lot of that work, and then I was having other people do it, and I would do the stuff that I thought I was uniquely able to do, and other people would do the other part of it. So I was a participant in it. There are plenty of other situations where the manager just isn't a participant because they don't do any of the work. They just manage people, which is fine. So when you use the word participant, in that framework, it actually means the people who are doing the work. What about information? IT people normally think that information is the information that's in a database, and they can do an entity relationship diagram to describe the information in the database. Well, that obviously is very important information. Is there any other information that's important? If people are doing work in a company, another kind of information that's very important to them is, what are the goals? And very often people will do work differently if they have different notion of what the goal is. Another bit of information that's very important is, what are the business rules? Another one is, what are the preconditions before I can do a step? Or what are the postconditions after I do the step? Or what is the trigger that gets me to do the step? Another kind of information is the conversations and commitments that people just have while they're doing their work. So now that stuff doesn't necessarily go on a computer. Does that make it irrelevant? Well, it's very relevant if that's part of doing the work. So when someone's doing the analysis and they're talking about information, they should go through, what are the different kinds of information that are really relevant here? The work system approach, the basic lens is something called the work system framework. It has 9 elements to it. I just talked about 2 of them, the participants and the information. There are some others. I'll actually go through them. And for each one, I'll just show you, tell you a little bit about the different pieces because that's worth saying. So the idea of the work system approach is you start by saying we're talking about a work system. You talk in a fairly vague way about the participants and the information and what's produced and so on. And then you get a little more specific. And at each stage, the terminology tries to help you get more specific without forcing you to say something that you're not interested in saying. When you talk about the technology in a work system, technology really takes 2 forms in work systems. One form of technology is a tool. Like, for instance, if you go to a doctor and a doctor listens to your heart, they're using a tool called a stethoscope. The stethoscope helps them do the work of listening to your heart. When you're at the doctor and the doctor wants to prescribe something for you, a drug for you, but is a little concerned about whether there will be a drug interaction, the doctor might put it into a computer and press a button, and somewhere, some algorithm is going to figure out whether it's going to be a likely drug interaction and will come back and tell the doctor the answer. Now, that's basically an encapsulated service. It's a service that goes off and does something by itself. It's responsible for doing that work, and it comes back with the answer. So when you talk about the technology inside of a work system, it really takes 2 forms. One is a tool that you're using, and one is an encapsulated service that goes off and does something for you. When you talk about processes, I've found this a really very interesting topic. When you talk about processes, there are different levels of processes. And the different levels of processes are documented to differing extents. So the most structured processes, I'll start with the most structured ones, are kind of like the semiconductor manufacturing that I used to work in, where they would provide, the engineers would produce a 100 or 200 step process going through different kinds of machinery that would produce the semiconductors. If anyone did any step slightly wrong, the product would be ruined. So in that particular case, the people who were doing the work absolutely had to do the work in exactly a particular way. And if they didn't do it in that way, the product would come out wrong. And it would be obvious that something was done wrong. Let's relax that a little bit. Let's talk about a kind of work where we care about the sequence of doing the work, but it might not be that important that it's done in a particular way. That's called a workflow. That's most bureaucratic processes are like that. Most office processes, like when I send in a request to be reimbursed for a travel expenditure, that's not like semiconductor manufacturing where they got to do it exactly a certain way and it'll be terribly important if they don't do it that way. Instead, when I send in a travel request, a request for reimbursement, what's important is that I sent it in. There's a date when I sent it in, that someone looks at it and makes sure that it's appropriate, makes sure there's a budget. It doesn't matter whether they look at it in the morning or in the afternoon. It doesn't matter if they group those into 10 at a time because it's more convenient for them. It fundamentally matters that the whole thing, the whole process gets done in a reasonable amount of time, and that we go through all the steps that we have to go through. We have to send in the form. We have to have someone look at it to make sure there's nothing obviously wrong with it. We have to have someone make sure that it's consistent with the budget. We have to have someone decide who gets paid and pay the money, and we want to separate the responsibilities on that. But that's about it. It doesn't have to be handled the same way as semiconductor manufacturing. So there it's really, you care about the sequence. You don't care so much that every last bit is done in exactly a way that you prescribe. Getting even less structured, you have things like when you go to the doctor. When you go to the doctor, if you went to 100 doctors with the same complaint, if it was a very common complaint, they would basically come out with the same answer. Most of them would ask, would perform one or two tests to make that were the standard tests related to that complaint, because they know about that if they're competent doctors. But they might not do it in exactly the same order. One of them might ask you, well, basically, how are you feeling? Someone else might say, well, show me that problem and let's just look at that problem. That's what I want to look at right now. So when they were finished, they would probably come out with basically the same answer, but they might have gotten at it a different way. So in that case, I would call that a knowledge-intensive process. If it's knowledge intensive, very often it doesn't really matter that much that it's done in a particular sequence. But what does matter is that the standard knowledge that's available is used well. And even less structure than that is a fundamentally creative process. If it's a fundamentally creative process, then you cannot tell someone else how to do it. If it's creative, they have to figure out how to do it. Now, it's very possible there are tools that can be provided that will help them. And if they know how to use the tools, they'll be able to do much better. But exactly where to start and exactly like what order to do the work in and when to iterate on doing the work, different people would do it different ways if it's a creative process.
So I have an example for that. Is writing a slogan for a marketing campaign or something like that.
Absolutely.
That is a very creative process.
Absolutely. And what might happen is that the instant that comes out is when someone's taking a shower and they're singing a song in the shower and they come up with this great idea. Now, that means it's not very reliable. That means it's not very, you can't replicate it very well. It means if you have different people doing the work, you might come up with completely different answers. And that's the nature of creative processes. So anyway, I was just talking about the fourth element of the work system framework, which is processes and activities. And I was saying there are four different levels of thinking about that. And one of the things that ends up being a problem is that a lot of people really focus on more or less the workflow kinds of processes, and they try to establish workflows for processes that are workflows. That's fine. People tend not to be too upset by that because that seems very natural. But if people try to overstructure a workflow to make it seem like semiconductor manufacturing when really it's just a workflow, then people get annoyed and they do workarounds because there's no reason to make it quite as structured as someone might imagine. If it's knowledge work or creative work, people get really annoyed if someone tries to overstructure what they're doing because there's no reason for it. And then they do workarounds also. That's one of the reasons why it's tremendously difficult to get doctors and nurses and other medical personnel to do things in a particular way that has a sequence in it because there's such great variety in what they end up doing. So there are many other things you could talk about with regard to processes and activities, but I just want to give you some examples of that. Now, what is produced? When you're producing something out of a work system, you're producing something that has some elements of a product and some elements of a service. And for this purpose, I've actually really thought about this a lot and have gotten involved in research related to services. And what I found basically is that trying to characterize what you're producing as either a product or a service actually is useless for this purpose. It's much more useful to think of it as I'm doing some work, there's an output of the work, but I don't want to call it output because that sounds like it's something coming out of a computer program. So I'll call it product/service. And what it means is the things I'm producing have some characteristics that are more product-like and some that are more service-like. So I'm not even going to define product and service very strictly. I mean, there's a whole separate story I could tell, but it just gets too involved. But let's say that normally we think of products as more tangible and services as more intangible. If we think of that, then whatever we're producing, it's on a dimension from intangible to tangible. Where do we want it to be? That's what the interesting question is. How tangible do we want it to be? How intangible do we want it to be? Another question is, do we want it to be essentially a commodity where it's done exactly the same way each time? Or do we want it to be where the product is the same each time? Or do we want it to be customized to individual people? Well, that's just a dimension from commodity to customized. We have to decide where we want it to be. Do we want to co-produce this with our customer? Co-production means that the customer is involved in the production process. When you do customized software, the customer is involved in the production process because they have to give you the requirements, they have to help with the testing, and so on. There are many other situations where you don't want the customer involved in the production process. If I want to buy a basketball, I don't want to be involved in the production process. I just want to buy the basketball. And so there's a whole set of these design dimensions for the product service, and think about it as a product/service, and then think about where you want to be on that dimension. Another one that's very interesting is, do we want to treat the way this is transferred in, to the customer as a transaction? Do I want to treat it more or less as a transaction, or do I want to treat it as a relationship? So when I go to my doctor, I really like the fact that there's a certain amount of a relationship going on there. When I go to get a vaccination from another place, I actually don't care about a relationship. I just want someone to give me the vaccination and leave, and I don't want to spend a lot of time. Those are two really different approaches. Okay, so that's the product service that's produced. What about the customer? Well, we have internal customers and external customers. An internal customer is a customer inside of the company. An external customer is a customer who's buying something from the company or receiving. Like if it's a government, it's people who are benefiting from the government activities. What I tried to do in this is I tried to say let's essentially treat them the same. We have customers, whether they're internal customers or external customers, doesn't particularly matter at a first cut. And then you could say, well, I do actually have some differentiation. Like if it's external customers, I may have some customers who are more important than others. Like, for instance, one of my students one time worked for the electric company in where I live, and he was talking about some system that they had, and there are some customers that they have who are much more important than others. I am much less important than a customer like the big medical center. The big medical center, if something goes wrong, they better bring someone out there right away. Someone's going to die. If something goes wrong with electricity in my house, they'll say, well, we're sorry, we'll try to fix it as soon as we can. And they do a good job of fixing it as soon as they can, but it's not the same order of magnitude. Now, thus far, I talked about the stuff that was just in the in this one-page summary. So I talked about the system as people using information and technology to perform activities and processes to produce something for customers. Okay, there's three other parts of the work system framework that's the basic lens for thinking about things. The next part is, what is the environment that this happens in? If you took exactly the same process and you tried to do it in two different companies, it's very possible it would work well in one company and fail in the other. And why is that? It's because there are other things in the company that are really important. So two different companies may have a different company culture. If you have one company that extends across different countries, you might find that exactly the same company, the way that they did things in Germany would not work if they tried to do the same things in the United States or in China, because the national culture is somewhat different. So I'm telling you now about different aspects of the environment. In the work system framework, it just says, consider the environment when you're thinking about the work system. Okay, so one aspect of it is the culture. Another aspect of it is the recent history of the organization. The recent history of the organization may make people think that they really don't want to mess around with computerized systems, or it may make them think that, wow, we put in a computerized system last year and the work is much easier and we're doing much better for our customers. I'm not very skeptical now. I think that this will actually work. Another important issue is the demographics. What happens if you have people who are about to retire and you want to install a new computer system versus people who are 25 years old and look forward to a long career at the company? They might look at that situation quite differently. Another aspect of the environment is the competitive environment. Your company might have been doing the same thing very well for 20 years, and some new companies came along. It's very possible that the stuff that you've been doing very well for 20 years is not going to work in the future because it won't be competitive. And the way you see that is from what's going on in the environment. It could be that the technology that you're using is increasingly obsolete, and it may have worked well for you, but it may not work in the future. So anyway, that's the environment. That was the seventh part of the work system framework. Again, it's just this lens for, say, you want to analyze something after you said what it is, say, what's basically the environment that this is in? It has a few pieces. Let's look at some of the different pieces. Some of them may be totally irrelevant, but some of them may really tell you something about what you're doing. Another part of the work system framework is the infrastructure that supports the work system. So infrastructure is resources that are shared by multiple different work systems. So for instance, when I give a presentation somewhere, I walk into the room, I've thought about who I'm giving the presentation to, I have my slides prepared and so on, but I actually generally have not worried about whether there's a projector in the room. And I'm not generally worried about whether my computer will hook into the projector or things like that. I mean, that's not true. I very often say in advance, let's make sure it's going to work. But those things are what I view as the infrastructure. That's the technical infrastructure that allows me to do my work. My work is not about the infrastructure. I'm not really paying a lot of attention to it. But if it doesn't work, if the infrastructure is not there, I'm going to have big trouble. In general, there are three kinds of infrastructure that are important to think of. So one is the technical infrastructure, which is networks and the cloud computing and the software that everybody uses in the company and the electricity and the lights and so on. That's technical infrastructure. Another kind is information infrastructure. Information infrastructure is the shared information that large parts of the organization have access to that may not have been generated by the part of the company that uses it. And so one of the points of ERP systems like SAP is that you provide an informational infrastructure, and sometimes people talk about that as one version of truth, where different departments do work in different ways. And still, there has to be some way to have coherence in the company. So they say, okay, we'll do our work however we do it, but we have to put data into this standard database. That's the informational infrastructure. The last kind of infrastructure is human infrastructure. And when you work in a company and you have your particular work to do, you're supported by many other people in the company who may not be doing the value-added work in the company, but still their efforts are necessary in order for the company to succeed. So an example, simple example, is the legal staff. That's part of the infrastructure, the human infrastructure of the company. Some companies have a training staff that goes around and trains different people on different things. Very often they're not part of your department. They're just part of some other department, and they make sure that things work well in the company. So human resources is part of that. And there are other another part is just maintenance, making sure that the physical environment is in good shape. Okay, the last piece is strategy. So I just gave you 9 pieces. So participants, information, technology, processes and activities, products, services, customers, environment, infrastructure. Those are all things that business people talk about. All that this has done thus far is just organize them. The last one is strategy. And if there is a strategy, then it usually helps you think about the work system. Unfortunately, very often there really isn't a strategy. Regardless of how many times people say there should be a strategy, very often there isn't a real strategy. And so strategy is listed in the work system framework as the last piece to look at. And as you're thinking about your work system, you can ask, is the way that this work system operates consistent with the company strategy? Our company strategy is that we are a luxury brand and we want to look beautiful to the outside world. We want to do everything so that it seems first class. This particular work system, which is a customer service work system, does it look first class? Is the interaction first class? Or does the interaction seem like this company is a low-cost provider? So that's a really important question. If the company is a low-cost provider, then everything in the company should be done to reinforce being a low-cost provider. So when you think about strategy, you could think about the company strategy, you could think about the department strategy, and you could think about the work system strategy. Those are different strategies. And inside a company, let's say you have a company that tries to be the best software company around, then that's the company strategy. Within the company, you have different departments that might actually have rather different strategies. Like, for instance, in that best software company around, you have a finance department that might try to be very rigid about when the contracts were signed to make sure that we don't have any kind of fraud going on or anything like that. And that might not be the way that the rest of the company operates, which is fine. That's their strategy, the way that that part of the company should operate. So what I did, just to summarize, I started by saying the fundamental point is think about systems and organizations as work systems. Think that the problem is owned by a work system. Then I said, summarize the work system on one page, talk about the problems in a fairly general way so that you can have a discussion about it. Then I said, let's look at it in more detail. And when we look at it in more detail, we take all nine elements of what I call the work system framework and look at them in more detail and see that there's a lot there. And I haven't even gone into what are the many, many different ways you actually could analyze a process. And something like BPMN diagrams, I consider that to be just one of the ways you could do things. There's no reason to say that that's part of the work system method, but when you reach a certain point in the work system method and you say, I need to actually know how it works, then go do a BPMN diagram. If you need to understand the different kinds of problems, do a Pareto chart. If you need to understand how the problems fit together to like multiple different problems linked to yield the main problems that you come up with, then maybe do a fishbone diagram that identifies a bunch of causes and effects. So there are many different tools that might be used depending on whether you have the information and depending on the kind of problem you solve.
Can I connect to the last part when you talked about strategies? There's one question that I think we should clarify is how does a work system relate to what the formal structure of an organization is? And it does not, for me, it does not necessarily map on a whatever part of the hierarchy we are looking at. A work system is orthogonal to that. Is that your view on that?
I think most work systems actually fit within a department. Most of them do. But actually, it's just a different way of thinking about things because there are many work systems that go across organizations. Like if you have a value chain in an organization, it might be worth it to think about some aspects of that value chain as going across several different departments. When you think in terms of an organization chart, that kind of puts you in a box. And it says things happen inside those boxes. And it, in many cases, that's not where things really happen. So one of the things that's very interesting that's come out of management research in maybe the last 10, 20 years is people have started to do network analysis. And network analysis starts to look at, this is not about computer networks, this is networks of people. So who talks to whom? Who influences? Who are the gatekeepers for the ideas in the company and stuff like that? That's just a different way of looking at things. So this actually does not start with a department. It starts with a problem.
So thinking about work systems then would help me also to think out of the box. I mean, that is a way to start thinking outside of those department structures that I find, and they may not map onto the processes, for example.
That's right. That's right. And so almost any method that tries to be reasonably flexible but also provide some real ideas, it doesn't let you get totally out of the box, but it lets you get more or less out of the box. So I don't know if that made sense. So it tries to give you one person, a famous researcher from MIT, calls this interpretive flexibility. You have flexibility for how you want to interpret what you're doing, and then it's just a question of talking to other people about the situation and coming up with an agreement. So my assumption, basically, there's like an ideological assumption underlying this whole thing. My ideological assumption is that every person has the right to be able to think about systems in their own organizations in ways that make sense to them for their own purposes. And if you're talking about a manager who's going to go into a meeting in 5 minutes and someone's going to present something, and then maybe they need to have some way of just jotting down a few things that's going to help them organize their thoughts. If you're talking about someone who wants to do agile development and they're starting a project, it makes sense to spend an hour talking about, well, what's the work system we're trying to improve here? Instead of just jumping into saying, what's the software we want to improve? And they would think about that somewhat different, use basically the same ideas at a slightly different level of depth to think about it. If you have someone who wants to do an important project and they've got weeks to do the project to figure out what's the recommendation they want to make, then they can take the work system approach and go into substantial depth in different areas. Let me just mention some of the substantial depth they could go into. Thus far, all we've really talked about is what's the analysis and what's the system, and then there is an analysis. Well, if you want to make a recommendation, then a recommendation in a real situation has to be based on some notion of a project plan, because when you make a recommendation to improve something, you want your overall results to be better. If your overall results are better, that means that you have to take your operational costs and quality and so on, and have to also consider how much it costs to make the change. You're going to do a project to change from the current system to the new system. So someone who really is doing a serious project with this stuff, as opposed to just thinking about it a little bit, they have to take the time to figure out what would be the project that would get me from my current system to the new system of doing work. The new system of doing work, think about the different things that could change. The new system, I mean, in general, the new system of work could have a new process, a different process. It wouldn't be totally new, probably, but important parts might be new. It might have people who are trained differently. It might have different people. It's possible that the people who are there right now shouldn't do the new process because they should be doing something that's higher value. That we have people who are too skilled to do the new kind of process. We're setting up the new process so people with fewer skills can do it. Therefore, you take the people with more skills and you put them on something else. It could be that we're going to have different information that we're going to use. It could be we're going to have different technology that we're going to use. It could be that we're going to produce different product services for our customers. It could be that we're doing things for different customers. So all those things could be changing. If I'm really doing a serious analysis with this, I need to think about all those things.
Mm-hmm. And in a sense, I want to make a small step back, because I want to ask one question concerning the scope of a work system. How large can it get? And it is, first of all, a unit of analysis I mm-hmm. look at. And I can choose how large I want it to be. And your examples, when we now talk about strategies, for example, you just mentioned the different levels, looking at an entire organization, company, department structure, department strategies. A work system seems to be below that. Is there any advice that you can give on how to frame a work system?
Yeah. In general, when you start analyzing a work system, what you try to do is you try to say, ask yourself, I've got a problem or opportunity here. What's the smallest work system that has the problem or opportunity? So it's as simple as that. It's not so simple, ultimately, but that's the question you ask. If you're trying to solve a problem and you think that the work system is something very big and it really isn't, you're going to spend a lot of extra time solving the problem. If you try to solve the problem and you think the work system is smaller than the real problem is, then what's going to happen is you'll solve something, but you won't solve the real problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the ideas of work systems were designed for addressing problems that work systems have. So a work system is a system inside of an organization that in which people do work and that kind of thing. That means that if you took, if you want to say, well, let's assume that the entire company of Mercedes-Benz is a work system, or let's assume that the government of Germany is a work system. You could actually do that if you really wanted to, but it wouldn't be useful. And the reason it wouldn't be useful is that the ideas in the work system approach really need to be adapted in a totally different way to deal with giant organizations as giant organizations. So this is really about a particular work system. And let me mention something else about what it is about. Let's say you want to talk about a supply chain. Now, a supply chain may cross many different organizations, but it doesn't really, the thing that's important about the supply chain isn't the entirety of all these other organizations. Instead, it's the work that's done in these different organizations. So it's possible to take the same idea of work system and think of it as applying across organizations, because you're looking at a supply chain and you're thinking, what are the activities that happen in the supply chain that produce the product services that go to the customers of the supply chain? And in that case, as you analyze it, you start to think about, we have an environment here where some of the participants work in different companies. I wonder whether they have different motives. I wonder whether they have a motive to hide information from each other. I wonder how I'm going to get this thing to work in a rational way that's going to be as good as possible for all of the players. The idea of work system started with look at something that's happening inside a company, but it could apply to something that's happening across companies. In the same way, the idea of work system started with almost any process. It applies to work systems. It applies to information systems. An information system is just a work system that only processes information. Now, what that means more specifically is that if I have a system where I look at the activities in it and all of the activities are either capturing information or storing them or retrieving information or transmitting it or displaying it or manipulating it, then it's both an information system and a work system at the same time. So work system is a more general case, but everything you would say about a work system is also true about information systems.
And you would, information system then could include computer technology to store and process information,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
yeah. But not necessarily. I mean, that's the point you made before.
Right.
There's a broader conceptualization of information. And you had nice examples involving information that is not stored on computers, but is very important to understand and analyze the work system, right?
Yeah, so let me just give an example of that. This is an old example, but the Xerox Corporation had the Palo Alto Research Laboratory, which is very famous because, among other things, that a lot of interesting things happened there, but they had a group of anthropologists there. And someone came up with the idea of let's have an expert system that will help our field technicians diagnose what's going on with machines in the field. And so the copy machines in the field are kind of complicated. They were very complicated then. These are big industrial copy machines that have to operate at very high volume, and they're pretty sensitive. So the technicians were very highly skilled, and they had to solve difficult problems. So someone said, let's make an expert system that will help them solve those problems. And eventually the anthropologist said, well, maybe it would be a good idea to just understand how they deal with knowledge. And so, like, do they really look at manuals when they go out to try to solve, to fix machines? Well, first of all, they don't particularly look at manuals when they go out to fix machines. They're trained, and then they go out and they fix the machine. Second of all, the way that they really transferred knowledge was that they would have breakfast together and they would talk. They would say, there's this really weird machine in that company and it had this problem. Any of you guys have any idea what that might be? Because I wasn't able to solve it the last time. And so if you said the solution was going to be a technical solution, and the way that they actually transferred knowledge to each other was talking to each other at breakfast, you know, you're not going to solve it that way. So anyway, that's an example I heard a long time ago. I hope it's true. I just think it's a really good example, though, of maybe technology's not going to solve the problem. And there are many, with knowledge work and creative work, there are many ways that people have proposed you should do it this way or that way. But it somehow has to work for the people who are actually going to do the work, and they may well have informal means that are much more effective for dealing with problems.
And the aspects you were talking about, anthropological aspects, human-centric aspects, you also mentioned when you were talking about goals or objectives of mm-hmm. work systems,
yeah.
which is a focus that sometimes get out of the view. If we focus on technology and all these aspects that are more formal in the sense of algorithmic and these things. And is that important to you to include these human-centric aspects into work systems?
Well, if you think of a system as having people as part of the system, I mean, it's kind of like, well, I have a car and I don't care about the engine. Well, I mean, you know, you sort of care about the engine if you want it to actually work. And of course, most people who work in most businesses are not anthropologists. So, you know, they're not really trained to do anthropological work, but most people who work in businesses do have a sense of what are really the motives here. And if I put something in place that is inconsistent with the knowledge that people have, inconsistent with what, is inconsistent with how they're evaluated and is inconsistent with their sense of aesthetics and their sense of honor and their sense of being capable people in the world, then it's kind of unlikely that it's going to work. Let me just go from there to something else. And this is another part of work system theory that I don't want to go into in nearly as much detail. But basically, when you have a system in an organization, there's something called the work system life cycle model. The work system life cycle model, which is part of work system theory, says you have a system that's operating. Little things happen from one day to another that it's still the same system, but it's not exactly the same. So for instance, we have 10 people doing the work. One day someone goes on vacation. Someone else comes in to do the work, a substitute. It's not going to be done exactly the same, but it's probably essentially the same system in many cases. Someone looking at it from one day to another would say it's essentially the same system. Well, every once in a while, so those are minor changes. Sometimes things happen and people look at the way they're doing their work and they're saying, all of a sudden we're getting more orders here than we got before. We have to change something about what we're doing. Let's figure out how we're going to change this a little bit without changing the identity of the system, but we'll just change something about how we're doing our work, and that'll make it easier for us to do our work. And everyone eventually agrees to what they're doing, everyone in that department, and it could be managers never even see that. It's just they've changed something. It's of no consequence to anybody else, and they get their work done. And that's called an adaptation or a workaround. And that turns out to be an extremely interesting aspect of looking at how work systems change over time. So first, let me just complete the story of how work systems change over time. One way they change over time is people are doing the work and they say, you know, we should do something a little different. No, it doesn't. We don't have to tell anybody about it. We're just going to do it a little differently. And so that's called an unplanned change. No one else planned it. we figured out we needed to do it, so we're doing it a little differently. No big deal. Every once in a while, managers look at a work system and they say, fundamentally, we need to do something different here. The people who are doing the work are using old software. It's not good software. It's not linked to the process that we have. They have to do a lot of workarounds. It's causing some difficulty. Let's have a project. So when you have a formal project, that's a plan change. So a formal project in the work system way of looking at things, this is a very simple way of looking at projects. There are lots of project models, so I wanted to have the simplest possible one that I could come up with that was consistent with this. So the project basically has three phases. There's an initiation phase where someone says, this is a project. We're putting aside some resources, some people and some money and some time to do this project. And I'll tell you basically what it's going to be. It's going to be producing some software or improving a work system, and it's that kind of thing. So we're talking about projects that improve work systems. Then there's a development phase. Development means producing all of the resources that are needed in order to implement in the organization. So those resources may be, we're going to build some new software. We're going to acquire software from someone. We're going to do a slight modification of existing software. Maybe we're going to change the process, the formal process specification. Maybe we're going to change business rules and analyze that. Maybe we're going to provide better documentation. Maybe we're going to provide better training material. All of those things are part of what I'm calling the development phase. The development phase is putting together all of the resources that are needed before you implement in the organization. Implementation means going from the old way of doing the work to the new way of doing the work. So a precondition of implementation, if you have new software, is getting the software running on a computer. But that's not the implementation we're talking about. We're not talking about it from the viewpoint of computer scientists. We're talking about it from the viewpoint of business people, where implementation is making the change from the old work system to the new work system. And the result is now you got the new work system. So I just gave you two ways to improve work systems, for work systems to change over time. One way is the plan change, the formal projects, and one is the unplanned change through adaptations and workarounds. And it's quite fascinating. I've actually done a lot on workarounds because I thought it was a very fascinating topic. And people have totally different views about whether workarounds are a good idea. One of the extreme examples of that is in medicine, where parts of the relevant literature say workarounds are a very bad idea because they endanger patients. They cause safety problems. In other words, if you have a standard way of doing a procedure, like installing a line into someone's artery in their body, then there's a standard way of doing that. And if you do it, then the infection rate is lower. And so you should really do it that way. Okay? That's one side. Another side is that there's a lot of articles by nurses that say that 90% of what we do is workarounds. And we couldn't get our work done if weren't doing workarounds all the time. And of course, I don't have an answer to that. But I would say that it's really worth it to look at the workarounds that would happen. In fact, what I think is if someone's designing a new system, one of the steps in designing the system, no one's ever done this in a formal way as far as I know, but I think it's a good idea. After we have a general design of the system, there should be a phase that's called a workaround design phase. And the workaround design phase is basically you ask the potential users, what are the likely workarounds of this thing? And make a list of the likely workarounds. And then once you got the list of the likely workarounds, you try to say, well, which of those seem to be a good idea and which seem to be a really bad idea? And in some cases, conditions will come along where you got to do workarounds, and everyone would agree that's probably a reasonable idea. In other cases, there may be some possible workarounds that people would say, you know, if they do that, that is going to cause a serious problem for someone else in the organization. So they really should know not to do it. And so people have really done some studies, especially in medicine, of workarounds. So let me just give one example. Should people in an emergency room log on to a computer? And so there's a paper that came out in 2015 with a title something like, what do you want? my logon or a dead patient. And what they were saying was that people in emergency rooms often are so busy doing so many things that asking them to log on to computers each time they have to register some information for someone is something that they think it's their obligation to get around. And so these researchers went in to see what was done about work about logons. So one of the things that people do is one person logs on in the morning and they leave it logged on all day if they can. And so with that, it looks as though that person did all the work, that no one else did any work. But at least the logon didn't get in anybody's way. Another approach is to have the logon ID, the logon password be one letter long. Now, why would you have a logon that's one letter long? Because the people who are doing the emergency room work actually want to do the emergency room work. They don't want to be logging onto computers all the time. Another approach that these people found was that there are post-it notes all over the place with the logon, with the passwords. And there are logons all over the place. There are passwords posted all over the place in supply cabinets that are supposed to be secured supply cabinets. Because basically, the people doing the work want to be able to get the stuff to the patient as quickly as possible, and that's what they really care about. So it's very interesting to think about whatever is the system that someone imagined who was in a lab somewhere, and then what was installed in the company, how are the people who are doing the work themselves really going to do the work, and are they going to do workarounds?
That's very interesting input for those who are designing systems and also mm-hmm. computer systems, because those aspects are very often overlooked and not paying attention to those.
Yeah, I agree with that, yeah.
I would like to ask a couple of questions about the work, when you did the work on started the work on the work systems and then it evolved. Yeah. Did you have any related work that inspired your work? Did you look at other approaches to mm-hmm. describing these?
So when I went back to academia, at one point I had the chance to go to Washington, D.C. for something, and I forget what the reason was. And in Washington, D.C., we have the Library of Congress. And I knew I was starting to write a book about systems and organizations. This is my first edition of my information system textbook many years ago. And I went to the Library of Congress and I spent 2 days there trying to figure out whether anybody said anything that was important about systems that I could use. And unfortunately, this was before the internet. It was almost impossible to find anything that was useful. So I just said, I found some articles and I didn't see why they were really useful. There was some stuff about general system theory. And so stuff about general system theory basically said, when you think about a system, think about what is the system, what's its environment, what's its boundary, what happens inside of it, what are the components in it that interact in some way, and the fact that a system is more than the sum of its parts. Now, to me, it's like, okay, fine. But I don't see how that's telling me something that's really useful. And that was one of the reasons why I ended up trying to be specific about the things in the work system approach. That the more I could provide some guidance that wasn't a straitjacket, it was just guidance about what to think about, what was a good lens, what was a lens that allowed you to work in different levels of depth, that would actually be useful. And so I did start by looking for other things. Now, at this point, it's many years later, of course, and now we have the internet, and now I'm always looking for other things that people are doing that are interesting and so on and so forth. So let me give one or two examples of that. I described the work system framework, which is basically when you look at a work system, what's there? The way I described it was as something that's pretty simple, as 9 elements. I mean, you'd think that there's more vocabulary that's the base vocabulary someone might want to look in things more deeply. And furthermore, the work system framework doesn't actually lead you directly to say which person is using what information in what step and so on. Like, for instance, let me just back up to something I said before, that one-page summary of a work system actually doesn't say which person is using what information. Instead, it only says somebody is doing a step, is performing a particular step. The reason why it does that is because it has to be on one page. If you try to specify all of the technology and all the information that was used by a person for each step, then you couldn't possibly put it on one page. And for getting a summary, it's not really important to go into more detail like that. But if you want to get closer to what IT people do, then you do have to have a different level of analysis, a different level of description, really. And so I made up something that was called, that I called the meta model. The meta model is a reinterpretation of all of the ideas in the work system framework in a more detailed way. I mentioned a little of that, but let me just sort of summarize a little bit. The meta model says a work system always has activities. It may have a business process, it may not, depending on how you define a business process, but it always has activities. Activities are always performed by actor roles. The actor roles include a customer participant, like I'm a patient at the hospital, a non-customer participant, like the doctor or the nurse, and an encapsulated service, which might be a computer program that they use to look something up. The participants have certain knowledge levels, skill level, etc. When you think about the technology, it could be a tool or an encapsulated service. When you think about information, it could be transaction data, like a database, or it could be goals, or it could be strategies, et cetera, all these different kinds of information. And furthermore, what's produced by a work system goes to a customer's work system, and value for the customer is created in the customer's value-creating work system. So this kind of stuff goes on and on and on in details, because I was trying to figure out what would be a complete way of looking at the work system ideas in more detail. Okay, now I want to answer the question. There's one relationship in that model, which is that we have a work system that interacts with other work systems. It's very often there are just interactions between work systems. That could be one is supplying another, or one needs to share a resource with another, or one work system gets in the way of another. So there are many different kinds of interactions. And so in the meta model, there's a relationship between the focal work system and just other work systems. And so there's this arrow that goes from other work systems to work system and says interacts with. I just wrote a very long paper about that arrow. And when I wrote the paper about that arrow, I was looking at, in computer science, there's discussions of tight coupling and loose coupling and cohesion of programs. In coordination theory, there's discussions of different forms of coordination between people. In organization science, there are other ways of looking at interactions. So at this point, now that these ideas are developed, I can do that. There's one more place. There's a word that people use now called affordance. Like, what is the affordance of this technology for some situation? It turns out that affordance also is really about one of the arrows in the meta model. And I haven't actually done anything about that, but someday I may go and look at the very interesting stuff people have written about affordances to see if I want to say more. So at this point, I mentioned before, I have too much work to do. I basically have so many different places I could extend this stuff further. And I feel lucky about that, because there's just a lot of interesting things to do.
Now you just started talking about my next question, because okay. I wanted to know if you're still working on refining the work systems approach, and what do you consider as still missing? Because you mentioned already in our pre-recorded talk that you were thinking about doing new things.
Okay, so basically, at this point, I see a lot of different places where different parts of the work system approach could be elaborated more. And I go around to conferences and to universities. Like right now, I'm at we're having this conversation at the University of Duisburg Essen, where I'm visiting Ulrich Frank's chair here, and they're doing very interesting research related to enterprise modeling, and I just gave a talk about it at a conference. And when they asked me to do the talk, I said, well, this will be an opportunity for me to figure out whether this is about enterprise modeling and so on and so forth. It's another whole area where this could be developed. And at some level, that's the wrong thing for me to do. So the right thing for me to do at this point is that I've written a very large number of papers about this, and it's gone into some depth in a lot of different directions. So the right thing for me to do is to actually go through all of those papers and produce the current version of these ideas in the simplest form possible. That imagine you had a website that said, here's the basic idea about this work system approach. Here is a summary of work system theory. Here are a bunch of different applications of it in different areas, and here are a bunch of extensions of the theory. Like I just mentioned, the meta model. There's a theory of workarounds. There's a theory of system interactions. There's a whole bunch of other stuff. There's a lot of stuff about services. The thing I need to do isn't to develop it further. The thing I need to do is to organize all these different pieces in a way that makes them as directly accessible and easy to understand as possible. So right now I have a website called stephenalter.com that has a basic summary of the work system ideas and a basic summary of service system ideas. And then it has 50 or 60 or 70 academic papers on it. And so every single one of those papers has to have a little section that says, this is what the basic idea is, and then here's the extension of that. It's the new idea. And I mean, I imagine it would be really annoying to look at all those different papers and wonder, like, which one really was the one that gives me the new idea? Where did it come from? How is it inconsistent with something that's going to come later, and so on? So that means I actually next year need to put together a new website. I'll keep that one for making papers available to people, but come up with a new website that basically takes all the ideas and puts them together in a way that makes them as accessible as possible. And maybe do an ebook on it and some other things. Right now, my idea is just to do it and give it away, you know, make it free and so that people could really use this stuff.
Do you still work with students? Do you supervise theses?
I retired from the University of San Francisco last year, basically because I was very interested in developing these ideas further and going around talking to people about them and how this is related to what they're doing and so on. And so the only teaching I do these days is I go to a university and do a short course. Like I actually did that last May at Duisburg-Essen here. I did a 6-day course for Ulrich Frank's chair, and I worked with an excellent teaching assistant who basically organized the course, and I just went in and taught. And I thought that was the way I should really be doing teaching. It would be people who were really interested in the stuff that I was developing and had worked on, but that would allow me to concentrate more on what I was trying to do since it's developed so far already. And so every once in a while, I'll go to university. I'll just have a discussion like with different PhD students who are working on one topic or another. And I'll give them my comments about, from my viewpoint, this is what's interesting. This isn't what's so interesting. This is, if you look at it through a work system lens, you would see some things, but then other things, the work system lens would be completely useless to you and so on. And I find that intellectually intriguing and probably worthwhile for the students.
So if one of our listeners would want to dive more into the work system approach, I think one good way to start it would be the website that's up right now, mm-hmm. and it would provide access to those papers. Are there any other ways that you can recommend?
I think that's probably the best way to start. On the website right now, there's a reference to a book I wrote about 10 years ago, which actually covers a lot of work system ideas. I self-published that, so it's inexpensive, and it's available just through Amazon or other stores. It's called The Work System Method. There are little things here and there about it that are a little bit out of date, and I understand some things better than I did 10 years ago. So the new website that I hope I'll come out with next year should be somewhat better starting point. I'll basically take that book and take pieces of it and just shovel it into that website, basically, but with a better framework for it. So anyway, I mean, that's the best way for people to really get started. If there's a specific idea that someone has that they would like to find out a little bit more about, they could certainly send me an email. And then it's just a question of how many emails I get. like just the other day, I received an email from someone who was working as a contractor for the United States Army, and they had some question about how to use the work system approach for some issue that came up there. And it was something I hadn't really thought about. So in that particular case, it wasn't, go read a book. It was, you've already read the book. So here's my additional idea about what you thought about, but it was interesting enough. They said, feel free to contact me again.
So did you get feedback from people in organizations working with those concepts that you proposed?
I don't get that much feedback generally. So I have a few examples of it. Like, there was a recent PhD that was done in Hong Kong, and, the person who was doing the PhD was doing what's called an action research study at a company that does a delivery and customs clearance and other stuff like that. And they were having a few problems related to knowledge management in that organization. And so he went and he did the study, but in order for him to communicate with the people there, he used the work system snapshot basically to summarize his understanding of their organization. And on several occasions, people just said, wow, you really understand what we're doing. And what I was struck by in that case was that it was a one-page work system snapshot, and they were very impressed that he understood it very deeply. And I would think that he didn't understand it that deeply, but that it gave him a way to organize the ideas that was very useful. And then there's another example. There was someone who was at DHL in Europe who used some of the ideas as part of a big project where they had to take their old data warehouse that had become obsolete over many years. And as corporate initiative, they had to fix the data warehouse. So he just went around to the companies in Europe, to the managers in Europe, and said, well, we have to do a technical update on this data warehouse. So while we're doing it, let's actually look and see what was there before, and let's figure out what's useful and what isn't useful so we can actually have a sensible update here. And instead of saying, let's look at the data warehouse and the technology and stuff like that, instead he said, so here's the work system framework. Let's think about what you're doing with the data that's important to you as part of your work systems. And that gave him something to talk to the business people about that was keeping them in their realm of doing business, as opposed to in his realm of doing technology. I mean, he was someone who could do both, of course, but he found it very useful as part of a much bigger project for keeping track of what are we really trying to fix here? What's the stuff that was good before and is going to remain good? What was the stuff we have to eliminate? What's the stuff that, it's good in a local situation, but not good for the whole company. So we'll handle that separately. So there are examples of it, but I don't actually find out that much about many of those examples, unfortunately.
But I guess you would still welcome feedback on.
Oh yeah, if someone wants to use these ideas and hits a point where they wonder about something, certainly they could contact me. And depending on whether I'm traveling or whatever, I'd be glad to try to respond as quickly as possible.
Steve, do you have any final comments for our listeners?
Any final comments? So it's a comment about analytical methods, basically. So this tried to be an analytical method that provided a lot of guidance, but not too much guidance. It tried to say, here's a way of looking at things that was specific enough that people could do it. Like there are many, many hundreds of MBA and executive MBA students who have done this in my university and some other universities. And so that's very different from a technique where you have to put everything into a particular format and it has to be that way. Otherwise, the technique doesn't work at all. So it's worth thinking about when you're faced with a problem. Do I have a reasonably organized approach to this problem? Having a reasonably organized approach is usually a good idea. It helps you communicate to other people. But when someone says, well, why don't you use this technique? Very often the technique doesn't really address the problem, or it asks you to do something that isn't particularly useful. So I think that's the question that should have been in the back of people's minds during this whole discussion about what are the kinds of situations that I'm looking at? Would this actually be useful for thinking about it, about those situations further? Would it help me organize my thoughts? Would it help me organize a discussion with someone else? And would it lead me to a point where it was useful and now there's something else I need to do? Because I have no belief whatsoever that this is the solution to all the world's problems. It absolutely isn't. It's a good way of thinking about a system and an organization, and it helps you get to a reasonable understanding and helps you see a path to go further, but it doesn't solve all problems. Nothing solves all problems.
Steve, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us. It was a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much.